welcome to another week of Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. I am Lauren Fox.
And I'm Andrew Hansen.
And I always have to remember exactly what I'm going to say when I start, because none of this is scripted, so, obviously.
No, it just follows a pattern.
Yeah, I know, but, like, still, I don't know. There's just other things I want to say.
The last second you're considering, should I break the pattern?
No, I'm like, should I completely change things up and
audible at the line of scrimmage,
start speaking pig Latin? Yeah, no, audible at the line of scrimmage, yes, but
Omaha.
Yeah. So I guess speaking of audibling at the line of scrimmage, we'll get started early with the segues, because that's how we roll. That was really bad. Segues roll. Last night, this being Friday, NFL battle of 1 versus 3, and I'm not talking about teams. I'm talking about quarterbacks picked.
That's right.
It's weird. We talked about this at one point a few months ago. I feel like this is an unprecedented era of franchises being associated with a quarterback.
And rookie quarterbacks being thrown into the mix right from the start.
But it's weird. Like, you look at all these franchises, okay. People think of New Orleans Saints, Drew Brees, Steelers,
Roethlisberger,
Patriots,
Tom Brady.
No, Scott Volek next. but you think of Green Bay Packers,
Aaron Rodgers.
Okay, there's so many that you go through and you go team, and then there are teams who just didn't do that,
and they've struggled.
I still love the Cleveland Browns jersey where the guy has the name of
86 different quarterbacks.
Spurgeon, Wynn, and Tim Couch, and yeah, everybody. Andrew Spector, by the way, was at that Cleveland Browns game last night.
How about
that? Yeah, so they're not going to let him leave Cleveland.
He's one of the good luck charms. Everybody who's at that game should become
season ticket holders. Yes. But so last night was a battle of a couple of franchises that have had noted instability under center. The Browns being one. The Jets of the butt fumble being another.
Yes. I mean, they've been poster childs for instability at quarterback.
Yeah. So now they're hoping to have some stability. The Jets, of course, as we have made note of, started the rookie from USC, Sam Darnold, in game one. He played well in game one. Game two was a step down. Game three threw two INTs, and they lost to the Browns.
But they were up in the first half.
Cruising
along, and he was going to get his second win.
Yes.
If Tyrod Taylor hadn't been concussed. That changed everything. That changed the future of Cleveland.
I mean, yes.
It made everybody in Cleveland happier. They're sad for him. It's terrible that that's how it happened. But Baker Mayfield comes in for his first NFL action earlier than expected. And he was, wow, what a spark plug. He completely changed the dynamic of that game and of the season. He was completely different than Taylor. His influence was dramatic. He was energetic. He was slinging the ball down the field, making great throws, commanding the huddle like he was a 6-year veteran. He was terrific.
That's kind of him, though. That's sort of his MO. And he said that from day one. I think a lot of people included kind of poo-pooed it, but he did it when he was at Texas Tech. He did it at Oklahoma. That's just kind of how he just sort of has it. And it's not, I can't quantify what it is, and you can't really teach somebody how to have it, but he is a guy that gets in there and people respect him, and he kind of finds a way. And that's not something that shows up on a Wonderlic test, and it's not something that shows up in a combine. It's something that and employers all over the country do it. You try to interview somebody and figure out, okay, is this the person who's going to help my company grow? Is this person who's going to be able to walk into an office and sell them widgets? And Baker Mayfield, you get the sort of the feeling that if he was to walk into Starbucks, he'd be the best barista in the place, and the level of performance would go up there. He's just kind of one of those dudes.
Yeah, and they did talk about it on the broadcast last night. And there is a distinction, now that you mention it, between the combine and the pro day. Because the combine, you're working out with guys that you don't know. So there's no real chemistry. But on the broadcast last night, they mentioned that when the Browns went to the OU pro day and they saw Baker interacting with his teammates, they got a sense right there that he has and had it. You know, they saw that chemistry. They saw how he commanded the huddle, how, you know, everybody was interacting with each other, all on the same page, and they knew right then that they had their guy.
And that's kind of the bigger thing, too, is do his teammates like him? Do they respect him? Will they sell out for him? We saw it in the second half last night. Jarvis Landry was making catches that are just... He's a good player, and I've always thought he's a good player, but catches that I would say are, or had been to this point, a bit out of his pay grade.
Yeah, he went to the next level. I mean, he's doing the Philly special Cleveland style. All of a sudden, he's throwing two-point conversions to Mayfield. I mean, you didn't see that before Mayfield took the field.
No.
And one of the plays that I thought was just astounding was the first drive when Mayfield came in and he fumbled, his lineman picked it up, and he started running. He ran down the field for about 12 yards. I mean, he was running like...
Rumbling, bumbling, stumbling.
Yeah, like a lunatic. And, you know, the run got called back because the fumble had happened in the last 2 minutes. But, you know, just to see a play like that, you know, talk about guys having his back. You know, you could just see the lineman all of a sudden, like, so excited that Mayfield was in there and he felt the energy and he's rumbling down the field. You know, that you could just see it in so many different ways how the dynamic had changed.
Yeah, it's in... And whatever that it is, and it's charisma to a degree, but it's charisma sort of combined with leadership and it's trust. Whatever the it is, if you could write a book and teach people how to have it or bottle it, you'd make $1 billion.
And I watched the postgame interview with Mayfield as well, and he talked about a couple things. One, he hadn't gotten any first-team reps during practice.
Really?
Yeah, you know, and he didn't start talking about that. The interviewer asked him, Joe Thomas, former Brown. He asked him, how did you come out with that composure under those conditions without having any first-team reps in practice? And he said, well, you know what? That's just kind of how my life has gone. He said, it might sound corny, but that's what it is. You know, he'd been a backup at multiple places, and he had to learn that, you know, in practice, you know, whether you're getting the reps or not, You gotta be on top of it and ready at the snap of a finger that when your number is called, you gotta know the playbook and be ready to go out and execute it. So he just had that mentality for years that's what he was gonna do when he was called upon.
That's kind of sports psychology 101, though, is preparing for the situation, visualizing the situation, visualizing it even if you're not doing it. I'm sure you do it with golf. Because you're passionate about playing. You will watch in your, okay, this is my swing. This is where the ball is going. The more that you can do that and execute it, the more that you can just call upon it when you need it. And it's, I don't golf much anymore, but we used to, when I golfed a ton, work through a bunch of different scenarios, ball above the feet, ball below the feet, different types of lies. And we'd play around with all that stuff. And even now I got out, I played 18 holes for the first time in 5 years, but because that, like, side hill lie is such a familiar thing to me. I said, all right, I'm going to come through it and I'm going to start it here because I know it's going to wind up going there.
Right. You know, it's going to go right to left.
Yeah. And I know what I need to do to execute it, and you can just execute it and your brain just gets comfortable. Your body tends to relax a little bit because it feels like it's been in the scenario, even though it hasn't. And so there's that piece of it too, that, you better believe, yeah, he hasn't taken first-team snaps, but it's not like he's not watching.
No, he's watching.
And it's not like he's not thinking about it, because he is a bright dude.
Yeah, he's visualizing, and I absolutely do that in golf. I don't do the close-my-eyes Jason Day long visualization, but I do a quick visualization behind the iron shot to try and picture it going towards the pin, or, you know, maybe going on a safe side of the green, depending on the shot. But you've got to visualize that positive outcome to try and increase the chances that it happens. You know, and that's what I learned about sports psychology in college was visualize the positive outcome.
Yes.
So in baseball, you're visualizing the ball going over the wall in the right center field gap. And, you know, you're trying to immerse yourself in that moment. And then it does relax you because you start to think less about the mechanics and more about the outcome. And you start to expect the positive outcome. And then you go do it.
So, okay, funny thing to think about, because another of the storylines in football this last week was Fitzmagic down in Tampa. One of the best post-game press conferences I ever seen. He looked like Conor McGregor.
Yeah, he did.
It was
wow.
amazing. But and then you go and you I knew Ryan Fitzpatrick was smart. Obviously, he's a Harvard guy. Those you got to watch out for the Ivy League guys. But the thing that popped into my head when I saw it was, well, I wonder what he scored on the Wonderlic test. And I believe he scored, it was either a 48 or a 49. The highest score on the Wonderlic test ever recorded was another Harvard guy, Pat McAnally, the punter, who scored a 50. The highest guy in this draft class, do you know? I was surprised when I heard it.
Saquon Barkley.
Josh Allen.
Okay.
So Josh Allen had a 37 on it. So again, this draft class may or may not have been Rhodes Scholars. Have you ever taken one?
No.
They have like a 12-minute dummy one that you can take.
Oh, I'd like
12-minute
to.
Test, 50 questions. It was actually entertaining. I should have been working and I took one. Yeah.
How'd you score?
I scored well.
Fitzmagic
well? I'm Ryan Fitzpatrick without playing quarterback. Yeah.
Well, you've got the arm, just not trained for football.
I'm not like a quarter. And I'm 5'10 if I'm wearing good shoes. So, but it's it's interesting. That is kind of an antiquated thing. They're looking at other things. They want to see if a guy's got innate intelligence. And what the test really does is it's SAT-like. There are, so I test well, I guess. There are certain analogies, and there are certain sort of simple questions, and there are certain math things, and there are certain little tricks they put in there where if it's this, but if you don't convert to the other unit, then you'll mess up on the question. You could see how there are levels, and you could see how there are certain questions that are written like, okay, this is the SAT equivalent of filling out your name in the bubbles, and this is the equivalent of the more complicated stuff that the Harvard guys get. And you can also see, too, that there are a number of players, I have to believe, who just go, you know what? I've been playing football my whole life. I'm not going to take your stupid test.
Right. Or, you know, I'll go through it. I'll put some answers in.
Right.
And then maybe they get tired and they just start putting in C for the rest of the answers.
There are some people who look like it's a game. And I'm going to compete in this thing.
Right.
So, but yeah, the Ryan Fitzpatrick thing was neat to see. He's no spring chicken either. He's 35.
But it's his best two-game stretch. You know, there's... What a wonderful thing! I'm glad it's happening. He's been a journeyman, and now for him to, you know, grab that starting job and really take advantage of the opportunity. And it sounds like he's going to keep the job even when Winston comes back.
Curious to see. So a lot going on in the NFL. We'll touch on some more stuff later, and then I guess before we move too far into the show. I'm heading down to Jersey this weekend, making the drive through the teeth of rush hour traffic this afternoon into evening, possibly into tomorrow, depending how bad the traffic is, for a girls' baseball tournament. It's called the Maria Pepe Tournament. We'll have Justine Siegel, who is the founder of Baseball for All, a little bit later on in the show, but should be interesting. Girls' baseball wasn't something that I had really paid any mind to, in spite of the fact that I have a girl playing baseball who lives in my house. Just never occurred to me. We were watching in April. Next year I need to keep tabs on the number of different baseball games that I watch a piece of, because I'm going to guess I have to be somewhere around 300. It's obnoxious.
Do you usually hit like two per night?
The day games are the worst ones, because I'll be sitting there on the couch. And I'll put on game X, and then game X will end, and I'll flip to game Y while I'm working, because it's either I'm listening to reggae on Pandora on the TV or I'm watching baseball. It's like it's one or the other, and there's really not a whole lot in between.
Never both?
No.
Okay.
I'd overload, but it's good background noise for working.
Right.
And back in April, they did the Jackie Robinson Day to celebrate. What was it, the 71st?
Well, they do it every
anniversary.
Year.
They do it every year. And they have started doing a program called Trailblazers, where they have basically communities that have been traditionally underserved by baseball. And they bring them together. One of the communities is girls, and start digging a little bit deeper, and you find out that, well, there's a girl up in Vermont who's been a couple times to the Trailblazers. There's a girl who played at Sauhegan down in Amherst, who she'd be a good interview too. But she played for her high school baseball team. This is the point I am in my life when I say Maggie plays baseball and people go, with the boys in a co-ed league? If you want to call it a co-ed league, sure. But
you've probably heard of it. It's called Little League.
It's called Little League. But it has been interesting to see the number of kids that can play and love to play. And some of these girls, too, and I don't know where I stand on this piece. Some of these girls, when you talk to them about, have you ever played softball? You get this emphatic no. It's like I have Charlie on a leash and I'm trying to drag him through the invisible electric fence line. Like, he's got his feet down and I'm not walking through that thing because it's going to shock me.
I don't want to cross over. I don't want to cross the line.
Right. No, you can't cross the streams. But there are a number of these girls who, it's like, this is a point of pride. I've never thrown a softball. I've never touched a softball. How dare you insinuate that I would ever do such a thing? And I have one who does both and enjoys doing both for different reasons. So I'm curious to see this weekend. She's done practices and things like that, but this is her first opportunity to be on a field with nothing except girl players. And there are also women umpires as well, who will be there doing games, we've seen that. We've played in tournaments down in Salem where there have been woman umpires who have done the game who almost kind of like, wait, the catcher's a girl? I'm a big believer in, if people are interested and want to play and it can potentially grow the game, absolutely. Why would you close the game off to half the population?
Of course. And for this weekend tournament, how are they formed?
So it's basically geography based. This tournament was originally supposed to take place in May down in Jersey. It was a weekend that was going to be torrential rain. So because teams were traveling, they said, we're banging the tournament and we'll move it until September. In the interim, they had a national tournament played in Rockford, Illinois, home of the Rockford Peaches at Beyer Stadium, not named after Jeff, Tommy, Rich. they had these teams that are basically geographically set up. There's the DC Force, which has won the national championship a couple times. They'll be there. There's a team from New York. There's a team from Boston, which, to call it a Boston team is somewhat of a misnomer because you have girls who are traveling from New Hampshire, Vermont, that are playing on this team. And then there's a team coming from Quebec. So it's technically, I guess, it's an international tournament. it's fun. And girls baseball in Canada is in some ways at a different level than what we have here, simply because of Toronto girls baseball. There's a lady named Dana Bookman out of Toronto who was working in television news and put her career on hold to start up this Toronto girls baseball league. Now has about 500 girls. You have other provinces that also have done the same using her template, and it's sort of analogous to Little League up there. But it's a different setup than that is for a variety of reasons. I mean, Dana has set it up where it's a girls-only league, and the reason for that is to give girls the opportunity to interact with and mentor other girls, and also the fact that boys and girls are different. They will treat each other differently. They mature differently. So a 10-year-old boy and a 10-year-old girl, and I'm not saying one's not one better than the other. They're just different. And they're different in how they'll act and treat each other and how they either care for their physical appearance or not. And it only continues to change. So the girls have an opportunity to be with other girls who, for all intents and purposes, they can be role models for each other as they grow in the game.
Has the league in Toronto served as the template for what you've been working on lately?
Yeah, so we've been working on this thing here called New England Girls Baseball. I thank you to the town of Bedford. We got the ability to use some fields in the league or in the town. We will kick that off in the spring. It'll be a nonprofit with the idea that we can get girls from the ages of 5 to 10 to play baseball. And this isn't, the question that everybody always comes up with, and it's funny, I was at the football game last Friday night, and a friend of mine comes up and says, why not Little League? Well, I'm not taking business away from Little League. This is going to be a Sunday thing. It's going to be a couple hours on a Sunday, accommodation, practice, and game. But the idea is to get girls, young girls, having an opportunity to be coached by girls or women who know the game and want to teach the game and have passion for the game, so that these girls can look at their coaches and say, this is really cool. She can do this. I can do this too. And it's interesting. One of the people on the Parks and Rec Committee is the guy who runs the softball league in town. And I'm in their meeting presenting to him a couple weeks ago. And I said, I'm not looking to take anything away from softball. If anything, this is going to grow softball. You can still play softball. You can still play baseball. If you decide you want to play Little League, awesome. If you decide you want to play softball, awesome. This is a couple hours a week. You come out, you hang out with your friends, you hang out with people you don't know, you get taught the game from a different set of people and realize that, hey, maybe I do have a future in this game, this is a lot of what Justine Siegel, who we'll have on in a little bit, is talking about too, that there are development opportunities for girls in this game to go out and work in front offices. Major League Baseball is hiring women to work on certain diversity initiatives. There are all kinds of great opportunities in the game. And so for some of these kids, hey, you can have an opportunity. There's never been a Major League GM that's a woman. Hey, could be the first. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, you see it in other sports. Jeannie Buss has had a hand in the Lakers' moves for many years now. And so it is great to have those role models. And for the girls who play in your league in the spring, as it starts to develop and those older 8, 9, 10-year-olds get that baseball experience, if they do decide to play the standard Little League, it'll only help them be better players when they get there.
Right. I'm a big believer, I think I make reference to this every couple weeks on the show. You had the lot across the street from your house.
Right.
You guys, the neighborhood kids, went over there, chose up teams, and played. I'm not saying it can't happen. Kids just don't do it. And I don't know why that is, but it bums me out. Like, we used to, across the street from where I grew up, there was it was like a parking lot for all intents and purposes. And we would play baseball there, and you had rules of, okay, if you hit it like this, if you didn't have enough kids, you had rules based on where you hit it, what it was, single, double, triple. If it went over the fence up top, that's not a home run, because now we have to climb into the Justin's house and get it. So we all played games like that. Well, very rarely, I can think of certain exceptions around here, and it's the kids that are just gym rats or dirt bags, when I use those terms, both with complete endearment.
Right.
Those are the kids that get better because they just get reps. And it's not the reps that are mom and dad, hey, let's go to practice. Hey, let's go to the field. It's the reps of, I'm going out there. And yeah, I might scrap with my friends because I'm arguing with them over a call. But at the end of it, we're going to be friends. So we're learning conflict resolution. We're learning how to play games. We're learning how to make games up. Use our imagination. Like, those are real life skills that, as much as I'm a dude who spends my life in front of a laptop or on an iPad, that's a life skill, but that's a different kind of a life skill than those things that you can learn on a field of play in an unorganized setting.
Yeah, I mean, they're great life skills. They're also great baseball skills, as you're talking about, because when you go to a normal practice and you go in, you get your 10 swings, and then your 10 swings, and then your 8 swings. You do your three or four rounds of normal batting practice. It's very structured. When you go and play in a setting like that, it is wide open. You get creative. You start, you just start experimenting with different things, different pitches, different swings.
Grips, yeah.
You know, and you're swinging in different ways. You have more opportunity to try and, okay, well, I know that, you know, it's like the rule for one pitch. Once you've hit three home runs, you can't hit a home run or it becomes an out.
Yeah.
And so in a setting like that, it's like, okay, well, I know I can't, if I hit a real home run and it goes into the neighbor's house, it's not a home run. So I can't do that. So I gotta try something else.
Freddie Freeman. Yeah. I'm going to have to just hit balls over the shortstop's head.
That's
so
right.
Yeah, the goal with this New England Girls baseball thing is to have kids get reps, more kids play the game, more kids love the game. The game continues to grow. And, you know, I have no delusions of how long this stuff is going to take. Would I absolutely love to have a travel team up in Vermont and a travel team here and a travel team on the seacoast and a travel team or two down in Boston or three, one in Lowell, one in Worcester when the Paw Sox go, and do women in baseball nights at a bunch of different minor league stadiums surrounding these travel tournaments? Absolutely. Like, that would be a blast. And then have it be logical that, hey, as the girls get older, could you have high school teams? Well, they have girls' high school baseball teams in Chinese Taipei and Japan. So, yeah, you could have it here. And coincidentally, or not coincidentally, those are the countries that are winning the Women's World Cup. So it's... there needs to be some kind of infrastructure startup, but you can't have it be how things are now and expect that it's going to change. It needs to start at the bottom so that you have these younger girls who are exposed to the game who can then make the decision, yes, I want to get the reps and I want to commit to play more.
Yeah, and I've got to say I'm very impressed with your motivation to do this. And the thing that I have to give you extra props for is the fact that Maggie is not between the ages of 5 and 10 anymore.
She
can't.
<not.
laughs> She's not going to qualify for that league. And usually when you've got somebody who is starting something up like this or coaching, they do it when their child is participating. The fact that you're starting it when she can't participate, I mean, I got to tip my cap to you. That's really impressive.
I'm backfilling.
better late than never.
I wish I had thought to do it a few years ago because there is fertile ground. There are a lot of I ran the softball intramural with JP Ceruso last spring. JP, thanks for your volunteering. JP is a great dude. It was a big help. But we had probably 20 girls out there, and a lot of these girls had never really done any kind of a stick and ball sport. And they're good athletes. And so I sit and I go, why? Like, this makes no sense to me. These are, I'm I'm bringing the religion of baseball to the unchurched. Why did I not do this earlier? So, if the more opportunity that we have to do that, the better. It can only grow the game. For a major league team, they got to look at it and say, these are, everybody's a potential customer. These are people, if we can get them hooked on the game and help them understand the game, hey, Little League, this is good for you because when you ask for coaches in 10 or 20 years and girls go, yeah, I know a little bit about that game, I'll coach. Guess what? You have twice as many people to pull from who could potentially coach. Like, it, you know, I don't know. I really do think that it presents a great opportunity to grow the game. We will be doing at the Little League Complex, what is it, September 30th, so a week from this Sunday in the morning. You can go to, it's on Facebook. I have it's facebook.com/NEGirlsBaseball. There's also a website at NEGirlsBaseball.com that I guess now I actually have to finish it. I built it. I just haven't populated it. You can go there and see more information about the clinic that we'll be doing. It's basically all we're doing is a scrimmage on the 30th just to get girls out and let them play and have some fun. And, that is kind of the next step before we roll signups out into the fall.
Fall ball.
Or in the spring, excuse me.
Fall ball to get ready for the spring.
Fall ball to get ready for the spring. Hey, it's, I don't know. We used to play it year round. You know, it was, and that's, it's how, you know, you would think that I'd be better than I am. That's how you get good, though, is just,
when you live in Southern California.
Yeah, you play all the time. So, all right. So we'll take a quick break. We'll come right back with Justine Siegel, the founder of Baseball for All. She was kind enough to talk to us on her way into New York City. I think she's got some baseball-related meetings, and then on her way into New Jersey for tomorrow's tournament. You're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox rolling solo at the moment. Andrew Hansen not in the studio, but I guess I'm not technically solo. I have Justine Siegel, who is the founder of Baseball for All, and they have a big tournament going on this weekend down in New Jersey. But this weekend is the inaugural Baseball for All Maria Pepe tournament down in Edgewater, New Jersey. And Justine, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Anytime. So tell us more about Baseball for All, its founding, and its mission.
Baseball for All is a national nonprofit providing opportunities for girls to play, coach, and lead in baseball. As you know, too many girls are told they can't play baseball because they're girls. So while many of these girls play with their co-ed team, or they're the only girl on their team, for different weekends at our tournament, they get to play with other girls.
Which is, it's a fun opportunity, it's a unique opportunity, and the sense of camaraderie that you see out there on the field, really, it's a wonderful thing to see people root for each other. But the one for whom the tournament is named, Maria Pepe, has a history of her own. She played in the Hoboken Little League back in the early 1970s. What was her role in making youth baseball more open and more welcoming for young girls?
Well, she was part of the legal case that now brought to the New Jersey courts, and because of Maria, they allowed girls to play Little League. So Little League used to say girls couldn't play, and now because of Pepe, they girls can play. So she's been a big part of it, and she's one of the first girls to get to play Little League baseball.
Now, of course, since Maria's days back in the Hoboken Little League, many more girls and women have played, some in college, some professionally. Where do you think we are in the process of making women's baseball a more viable option for young girls like they do in the Far East?
Well, we just had the Women's World Cup here in Florida last month, which was really exciting. Women's baseball around the world is really growing. And here in the U.S., I think it's getting bigger. With Baseball for All, we focus on girls. So to make Team USA, it's sort of, you know, the pinnacle for these girls to dream about.
We are joined by Justine Siegel, the founder of Baseball for All, and big tournament going on this weekend down in New Jersey, the Maria Pepe tournament down in Edgewater. You, Justine, have a huge resume in the game. You've been around it a long time. The first female coach of a Major League Baseball team, as well as the first female to throw batting practice for a Major League team. Did you set out to be a trailblazer, or was that role sort of thrust upon you?
I decided I wanted to be a baseball coach when I was 16, and I first was a college baseball coach, and then when the opportunity to go pro, you know, I definitely pursued that. And I don't know if I set the path to be a trailblazer, but I do think it's an honor to be a role model for girls and to pave a path for them to aspire to.
And it's got to be a lot of fun at this point. Now you get to spend a lot of time around the game, and this is, it's your passion. Not too many people get to do something that is truly their passion and follow it around the country and around the world.
Yeah, for me, my passion is helping girls get a chance to play this great game. I love coaching because helping people become their best selves and to reach their goals is really satisfying. It's something I love to do. But this weekend at the Baseball for All tournament, you're going to get to see girls smiling everywhere. You know, they look right, they look left, and they're going to see a girl just like them who loves the game.
It's awesome. So joined by Justine Siegel of Baseball for All, and there have been some women who have played professional baseball outside of the famous All-American Girls Professional Baseball League that most people, when they think of girls baseball, it's like auto racing. You say auto racing and somebody says Days of Thunder. You say girls baseball and somebody says a league of their own. How close do you think we are to having a woman play affiliated minor league baseball? And what type of player would she need to be? What sort of skill set would she need to possess?
Yeah, I couldn't say how close we are. I think a lot of that has to do with development and true opportunity to show what you have. For me, it's a pitcher, a left-handed pitcher with maybe a trick pitch like a knuckleballer. But I can also see second baseman, like in the Negro Leagues, with Tony Stone playing second base. I think a woman would be successful there as well. But with pitching, I mean, pitching is all about deception. So if you can keep your batter off balance and get out, it doesn't matter how fast you throw.
Yeah, well, Greg Maddux was case in point of that. And it's the old saying that hitting is timing and pitching is upsetting timing. And that's really all you need to do. I mean, I just really grossly oversimplified something very complicated. But and that's the name of the game. It's interesting to see some of the younger girls who are coming up playing on the Women's World Cup team. I think of like Emily Tsujikawa, some of the others who have been around it and are kind of starting to crack through it a little bit and become more and more prominent on that scene. We talked a little bit about movies a little bit ago. What is your favorite baseball movie of all time?
The Natural. When I saw that in third grade and I just walked out of the theater thinking I'll play baseball forever.
Yeah.
I may have fallen a little in love with Robert Redford, but that was the best movie ever.
Well, yeah, that's... It's you've read the book, I assume, too?
Yes.
Okay. Which you watch the movie and it's this nice slice of Americana in the 30s, and you read the book, and the book is a much darker, particularly near the end. But yeah, that's one that if it shows up on TV, you really can't turn your eyes away from that movie. It's just so well shot. And he has a good swing for an actor.
Yeah, he convinced me. I was only in third grade, but he convinced me.
Yeah, I remember going to see it with my dad back in, I think it was like 86, 87. So, yeah, that is definitely a classic. Good one to hear. And then for this weekend's tournament down in New Jersey, our show will air Saturday morning at 9. How can fans follow along with the action that's taking place on the internet?
Yeah, I think the best way is to follow our social media, Baseball for All on Twitter and Baseball for All. It's on Facebook and Instagram, and we'll be posting lots of photos, and you can get to see the girls playing, and you'll fall in love with them too because they're beautiful playing the game that they love.
Well, certainly appreciate all the work that you do, the opportunities that you have provided for not just my kid, but for plenty of other young girls who ordinarily might not have done it or might have gone another direction, played softball. Not that, hey, I want kids out. I want kids doing something that makes them happy and that they can be excited and passionate about. But baseball is a fun thing. And for so long, it was not available to girls. It's wonderful that there are people like you who are so dedicated to making that available for them. And I look forward to catching up this weekend.
Yeah, same.
Definitely. Well, That was Justine Siegel from Baseball for All, and you're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. We'll take a quick break. Be nice if I could finish that sentence. We'll take a quick break and come right back on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox, Andrew Hansen, and being that it is school is in session.
And it's Friday.
We got to talk about some high school sports in the town of Bedford. So a lot going on, as always, on the varsity level, boys soccer, 6-0 over Londonderry. That was on Tuesday. Reynolds and Edwards, a pair of goals apiece. So boys soccer looking pretty good. They're rounding into form. Obviously, yesterday, which was Thursday the 20th, we got to have Matt Girard on. I have to drop him a line. Bass fishing had a qualifier event up at Center Harbor up on Winnipesaukee. So I love that. It just makes me happy that there's a bass fishing team at the high school.
Yeah, we can find out which fish were caught that day.
Yes, exactly. I'm going to guess they were bass. but I digress. Golf yesterday, what did you say the team total was?
196.
Okay, actually, we'll get back to golf because I want to. We're going to go golf to golf. Girls soccer, how'd you find that they won 3-1?
NHIAA.org, which,
yeah.
.org, which is...
NHIAA.org.
Sometimes it's accurate, sometimes it's not.
Yeah.
Earlier in the season, they hadn't updated the women's soccer schedule.
Chef and, I feel like I'm the chef in the Muppets. .org.
but it has been updated now.
So, all right, the girls won last night, 3-1 over Winnicunnet. Ellie Flynn, Gabby DeAngelis, and Shayna Solis all finding the back of the net in that game.
And by the way, soccer to soccer, boys soccer, if you're listening to our show Saturday morning, they play today at noon at home against Winnicunnet.
Noon at home?
Saturday.
Oh, Saturday, yes. Saturday, I'm like, today? Like, I can go over there now?
No.
Okay.
But all today, right. For the people who are listening
today,
on Saturday.
Saturday, yes. Although we do have some dedicated soccer fans who listen to our show on Friday or whenever it gets put up.
Sometimes it's up.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Harry will get it done today. We'll have it ready to rock and roll by the time he's in.
If, so, Harry hasn't retired at halftime.
If Harry doesn't retire at halftime, we'll get to that in
a minute.
Golf, the Bedford golf team, Elliot Wallace led the way, the medalist at 36. CJ Ledoux, 38. Owen Roberto, 39. On the way to a team total, 196. And they won by 27 strokes.
Against Nashua North, which keeps them undefeated.
Keeps them undefeated, and I mean, it also gives me a like I could have been the fifth or sixth guy, and they still would have been beaten Nashua North.
You could have been on that squad, yeah. And claimed victory.
I don't know that I have any eligibility left, Coach. So and we'll work to get Dan Colburn on the show as well. Good guest, and always fascinating to talk to him about what he's got going on the school front too, from the science and technology end of things. So, but things looking good there. And also, I should say, last Friday night, I had the opportunity to go to the football game. Big win over Goffstown, which leads us to our next thing.
The Player of the Week.
Player of the Week.
Fox on Sports Player of the Week.
Yep.
Week 3.
Week 3, Thomas Morgan.
5 touchdown passes.
5 touchdowns, 1 for the thumb. So, congratulations, Thomas Morgan. Look good. The wideouts look strong. He does a really nice job, and you'll see it tonight because you and Harry are doing the game against Memorial, but Thomas does a really nice job of avoiding pressure. He has a very nice sense of where he is in the pocket and where the pressure is coming from, and steps out of trouble. And that's, again, that's something that you can't teach. That's something you learn, but it's that sort of proprioception of this is where I am on the field, and I sort of feel that. And that's, you know, Sam Darnold has that sort of thing, obviously, to a different degree. But nice to watch Thomas Morgan succeed last week. Congratulations. You are our Fox on Sports Athlete of the Week for the week. I wonder if the Morgans might be our first brother-sister combo come basketball season.
Very well could happen.
Yeah.
And I just want to add that I really enjoyed watching him play last week because, to your point, I liked watching his throws. They were almost Baker Mayfield-esque. They had a little zip on him, you know, no wasted motion, and he had a variety of touchdown passes. The first one was a nice deep throw down the left sideline. Yep. The second one was a pump fake and then a deep throw down the right sideline. And then he had a screen pass to Toscano. He had a fade in the right corner of the end zone. I mean, it was just a terrific performance.
So Thomas Morgan, great game, well done, and our Athlete of the Week. Here in the town of Bedford. The other things to think about in the world of sports this week, I was pleasantly surprised to get on ESPN this morning. I have no doubt you were watching it and see Eldrick 5-under.
Tied for the lead in the Tour Championship. And this might finally be the week. He's been knocking at the door, top 5 finishes this season multiple times. And we've all been waiting and thinking, is this going to be the week he finally wins after 5 years without a win? And for him to get that first round where he's at the top of the leaderboard, I mean, there's no better setup for him. And the crazy thing is, they put up a graphic on SportsCenter last night of what needs to happen for him to actually win the FedEx Cup. If he wins this week, if 5 or 6 other things happen, he could come from his couch, his bed, not being able to walk, to being the FedEx Cup champion And it's not that out of the realm of possibility.
Lowly greenskeeper about to become the Masters champion.
As long as Bryson DeChambeau finishes 15th or worse, Keegan Bradley can't. Keegan Bradley cannot be solo second. And then Justin Thomas, Dustin Johnson, I think they have to be tied for third or worse. So it's entirely possible, because Bryson DeChambeau had a bad first round and so did Keegan Bradley. So you have to tune in this weekend to see if this is the week.
Bryson DeChambeau, he of clubs that are all one length.
That's right. That's right. And the thing about Tiger is, you always get a real good sense from him with his interviews. Sometimes it's just all business, and you can tell he's a little bit uptight, physically and mentally, because it's just not clicking for him. But after the round yesterday, he was really, he wasn't gushing, but he was really talking about how it's really coming together. Everything is sort of, it's in a groove now for him. He finished with an eagle on the 18th with a nice drive, nice 5-wood, about a 30-foot putt. And what a great, momentum builder to head into round two. And if he is feeling like it has now come together, watch out.
Yeah, it has been fascinating to watch this story and watch him come back. And, I think golf fans are rooting for him. That round that I was golfing with a client who owns a driving range and batting cages and all that sort of stuff. You think about the effect that Tiger had on that industry, but when Tiger was playing well and dominating, the numbers that he threw at me for how busy they were in terms of number of people versus where it is now, it's like night and day. It's just great for the game of golf, and a lot of it's just fun. Like, I feel like I don't know why, but I feel like if it's a Sunday and he's in contention, I need to stop what I'm doing and watch, which isn't good for my lawn.
Exactly. I mean, his influence on golf has been seismic. And now what's really going to be fascinating is to see not only him back in the pressure moment, how is he going to perform under pressure, but it's who is he going to be competing against in those final groups. You've got all these young Americans who have made a name for themselves in the interim, and they all looked up to him as an idol when they were kids. And then you've even got guys like Tommy Fleetwood, who's going to be one of the greatest golfers of the next generation. And he was playing with Tiger yesterday, and then he tweeted afterwards, very simply, Tiger Woods is good at golf. And so, to see this next generation of guys playing with him, interacting with him, tweeting about him after they looked up to him as kids, and then they're going to go, mano a mano with him in the final group, that's what's going to really add to the intrigue of Tiger's first win.
Yes, I agree completely. Why do you think there is a Tiger effect?
Are you filibustering? Are you trying to get me to filibuster?
Kinda. So I don't know where it came from. There was a bee. We're in a studio that is
it's closed.
Hermetically sealed
the door's
and climate
closed.
Controlled. All of a sudden, a bee comes and lands on my laptop.
I mean, there is a vent in the ceiling. Did it come through there?
Perhaps. But I'm an environmentalist and a conservationist.
So you conserve this bee.
Oh, I'm not going to kill the bee because the bee is going to do good things, pollinate flowers. The more you have bees, it's just better for the environment. But I'm so I can't kill the bee. So I'm finding a coffee mug and a piece of paper so that I can put all this stuff together so that I can my complicated bee entrapment device. I'm seriously, I'm wondering, because there are Rory, great player, fun to watch, Ricky Fowler, and truthfully, when Tiger was great back in the 90s, it wasn't competitive.
No.
It wasn't a question of will he win. The question was how much will he win by? So was it at that point in time that he was just doing things that were just eye-popping? That whether it was the Nike commercial where he's bouncing the ball on his wedge and then hitting it 150 yards striped, Was it the drives that he was hitting? Was it how he carried himself? Like, it's like nobody else.
You know what?
In
those days, I'm just realizing he was actually David and Goliath at the same time.
Yes.
Jack Nicklaus's 18 majors.
Oh, yeah, you're absolutely correct.
He's the idol for everybody. Tiger had his poster on his wall when he was growing up. So here comes this golf prodigy. He wins all these U.S. amateurs like nobody else has done, and he starts winning majors, and everybody knows his goal is to try and get to Jack Nicklaus, who is the Goliath. And as he's on that path, he does start beating everybody by double digits. He wins by 12 at Pebble Beach. And then at the same time, it's David versus Goliath with him. You know, if he's leading on a Sunday and he's wearing the red shirt, and whoever is
so much fun,
whoever is paired with him, can they knock off Goliath?
Right.
You know, because you're watching for both things at the same time. Is Tiger going to keep his perfect record intact when leading going into Sunday? And he kept doing it in every single major. So it's compelling in multiple ways.
There was that, but there's also the he was appointment television. Before appointment television was a thing, it was I was watching, and you needed to watch it because you needed to talk about it at work or at school or wherever the next day. And it was the kind of thing, as a sports fan, you remember where you are when he was doing blank. You know, and I mean, I still remember the Monday after the U.S. Open when he beat Rocco Mediate in the playoff. Like, we spent, I was probably too long of a lunch, watching the end of that. And, you know, even back to the one at Pebble, I can tell you the bar that I was sitting in, and everybody's transfixed on it, regardless of age, demographic, you name it. Everybody was watching. It was just like this fascinating thing. And so, and now we're back on it because he's back to being David again.
It's the comeback.
And everybody loves a good comeback.
Yeah. And when he was great and consistently great, it was just, you want to see the best at whatever event, a sport
you're
watching.
Absolutely.
And it's, what is he going to do next?
Well, I mean, you almost got the feeling at that point too, like, this is, I'm watching Leonardo da Vinci paint the Sistine Chapel. Did I get that right?
I think so. Yeah, it was. I mean, he hit it farther than anybody. He had the best short game, you know, maybe 1A and 1B with Phil, and so you know he's going to hit every clutch putt. You know, he hit to get into that playoff. He makes that downhill putt with a broken leg, basically. It was just, you know, the unknown of what is he going to do this time. And also, it was so exciting to watch him because he got so excited. He brought that fist pump
that golf
had never seen before.
Yeah, and I'm going to give the mea culpa right now because I screwed up Leonardo da Vinci and Michelangelo. So I'm sorry to the Latin teachers that I had for 6 years of Latin.
And if that had been on the Wonderlic test, that would have really knocked you down a level.
The thing is, I know the answer. I'm just sitting there like extemporaneously throwing out garbage. So at least I didn't walk out of the show half an hour in.
That's right.
So that's
not
happen.
That's not how we do things around here.
So it's funny because I guess I'll refer to myself as an aging athlete because I am.
Ichiro-esque.
Yeah, exactly. Ichiro-esque. Happy birthday next month, pal. But the real challenge, and I mean, I'm sure you've experienced it, but not to the degree that I have, or maybe you have, but this feeling that, okay, there are things, going back to talking about golf, there are things that I can do that, are they better than what an average 44-year-old can do? Yeah. How do they compare to what I did when I was in my 30s? Well, not good. There are other things that are better. Like, I can use my brain better, but my body doesn't cooperate. Or even the other day, I was catching Maggie. She was throwing a bullpen. I probably threw 70 or 80 balls. I'm sore. That never would have happened. And so you get to a point as an athlete, and yeah, I'm an athlete, you're an athlete, even though we're not getting paid to do it, where your body just doesn't cooperate anymore. And it's frustrating where you see a ball hit and you go, I got that. Wait a second. I don't have that. I would have had it, but I don't. Or I can score on that ball. Nope. Not going to happen. Your brain plays tricks on you, and it's humbling. And the question as you get older is, how do you deal with not just the physical aspect, but the mental aspect of, I'm going to stop this because I'm not at a level that I want to be at. I'm not helping anymore. And in the case that I'm alluding to, Vontae Davis, who good-naturedly we're going to give a hard time to Harry because only the Bills would have a guy walk out at halftime. The Browns won last night. Nobody's walking out of that Browns locker room. But I don't necessarily agree with doing it at halftime. I think that's quitting on your team, quitting on your coaching staff, and screwing up a game plan. I understand, though, my body isn't performing how I want it to. I don't have the fire that I have to go and do this anymore. I'm not really motivated to do it. And so I'm out. Like I get that. Walking out at halftime to me is just something you don't do. But if you're completely mentally checked out, like, how can you go out and play a football game at full speed? That's got to be tough too.
Yeah, and that was one of the compelling storylines of week two, the fact that he retired at halftime during the game. This wasn't a preseason game. This was week two. He'd signed a one-year deal for $5 million.
Does he get half a paycheck?
Good question. Very good question. But and my first instinct is the same thing. I mean, you don't want to quit at halftime, whether it's quit for the day or retire on your teammates. You've just played the first half with them. If you're going to quit, at least come back out on the sideline and support them for the rest of the day.
Hey, that's tough, though, because if you do that and you're standing in street clothes, now you got to answer 1,000 questions, too.
Well, he's going to answer them anyway,
right?
Whether it's in front of reporters or on Twitter.
Do you think he's a distraction if he's on the sideline, though?
A little bit less of a distraction. You know, he could make up a story if he wanted to have his teammates think that it's normal. He could just say, you know, I tweaked my hamstring.
Right.
But the mental side of it, I think, is more important. And he did give a quote, which I thought shed a lot of light onto the situation and makes a lot of sense to me. He said, "My intention was not to hurt my teammates. In that moment, my intuition was telling me I don't belong on that field anymore." And in the National Football League, that's a big thing. That is a dramatic, you know, it was like an awakening for him where he's out there and he's realizing all of a sudden, I just don't have it. And maybe there was a physical component to it, but I think it was more mental of I just don't have the drive anymore to be a warrior that my teammates are expecting me to be. And, you know, people's safety comes into question when somebody's out there and they don't feel like they should be out there.
Right. And I didn't see that quote, but that was kind of the subtext that I drew from that as well, was the overwhelming, and it's like a cloud that will come over you. Like, I don't belong here. I just don't belong. Like, and I, you know, this, we played a lot of basketball together. There are plenty of times that it happens where I go, God, I really lost the step, or what was I doing? I don't belong on this court anymore. And I'm sure there are others who play in the league who would agree with that as it pertains to me. But it's hard, and you have that sentiment, and you have two choices. You can either go, I'm going to disagree with myself and make it happen and do what I need to do for my team, or I'm going to stop. And he made the choice to stop very publicly, and it's a hard choice to make. And a lot of us, I think, underestimate how difficult it is to be a professional athlete. It's not easy. It's not easy to be at that high level, prepare at that high level. Depression for professional athletes has become more of a known issue. Kevin Love and some others have done a good job at bringing it to the forefront, but it's a real thing. And the depression of athletes who have retired is also a real thing. Like, my entire life was dedicated to this thing, and now it's gone. It's like, if, you know, what I do for a living, I could always, you know, I can find gigs. If you were an NFL player and now you're not an NFL player, that's particularly the mental aspects of, like, my skills just eroded. That's it.
Yeah, it's a major shift. And in the end, I don't really blame him. I mean, it's not like he's holding out and, you know, potentially even, you know, collecting a paycheck and being a distraction from his team and, you know, impacting them in a consistent way. It's not like it's one of these issues that you have to deal with week after week after week. So, you know, maybe somebody's asking for a trade. It's not like that. It's just he realized that he's not himself anymore. And he's, in the end, he's really doing everybody a service by saying, all right.
Short-term pain, long-term.
Let me step back. Yeah. Somebody else should be playing. And, you know, I'm not going to keep collecting a paycheck. And so with his mental makeup, I think it's fine. It makes sense.
It's the right choice, and it's a hard choice to make, particularly for a guy who's 30 years old, but he's financially well set, and it's a tough decision. The timing was rough for the team, but I understand the mental calculation that went into it. And that's kind of what I've seen lacking as far as the conversation that has gone around it is the, he just couldn't quit on his team. I get that. But there is a phenomenal burden to being an athlete, whether you're a good one, a bad one, an amateur or a pro. And it's, can I continue to perform? And when you don't think you can, well, it's a very tough decision to make. So with that said, we're out of time. Sweet. We will come back to you next week with a whole bunch of guests. I was writing down ideas for guests as we were talking, so now I got the hard work to do. Wanted to thank the crew here at Bedford 105.1, Harry Kozlowski for all his hard work, Bill Jennings, Chris Gentry, and Colleen Richardson. Thanks to our guest, Justine Siegel from Baseball for All, who we'll see at the Maria Pepe tournament down in New Jersey this weekend. And thank you for listening. It's been another week of Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1.